Welcome back to Midnight Grappler Animals, home of Flub Nation. This is the off season, but this week we're taking a more holiday approach because we spun the wheel before the recording this time, and it landed on movies on TV, goat movies on TV. And when we were coming up with the topics for this off season, when we got to that topic, we were like, damn, a lot of these movies have a very holiday-esque connection. Again, we were all children of the early 2000s and the late 90s, so we got to experience the wonders of cable television. For some of the younger listeners of this podcast, that used to be... I don't know why I'm doing that.
Do we have any younger listeners?
That's what I was thinking. Like, I said that, I was like, damn, the average person listening to this podcast is probably in their early 30s.
Yeah.
So that's the topic for this week. We're talking about movies on TV. The what is it? Turner Classical Movies, TCM, yeah. TCL, TNT, CBC. TBS, TLC, H&M, oh, yeah. HMV,
Hallmark.
Yeah, R&R. All those movies. We're talking about those today because by the time this episode comes out, it should be the holiday season. So everyone's getting ready to sit down in front of the TV, put a nice blanket on, brew up a nice mug of hot cocoa, and watch TV. Is that what you guys did when you were kids? Did you guys do that? Did you have that experience? What is your experience?
That's one of the things now is like, I mean, I think, you know, a lot of growing up, I had like a tiny TV in my room that had cable. And so I could kind of do that.
Look at this guy.
Big baller Keegan. Okay.
Yeah. I would ring the bells of some of my butler to bring me.
But
I would have a lazy Susan of accoutrements in front of me as I was eating and watching.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, I don't know though, because I never used it that way. It was always for games.
Right.
And then, like, by the time my last room I had at home, I didn't have any doors or like significant parts of walls, so like I was in the loft upstairs.
You went from having a TV in your own room to living in like this derelict no door situation.
Now I feel like I have to describe
what happened,
all
Keegan?
Of my rooms.
The 2008 financial crisis.
Yeah. What we call a reverse Fresh Prince.
I feel like I have to describe all my rooms now.
We lost our doors
you're
in the
like,
recession.
You're like Cricket, and it's always sunny. You're just like just keeps going spiraling down.
It's just different. It's not really down. It's just the changes.
It's different. It's just okay. Darker. I mean, that's a good, you know, that's a good outlook. You know?
Yeah, just keep your chin up.
Whenever life gets worse, it's just different. It's not actually worse. It's just different.
But I've like always been adjacent to the living room, I think. And so whatever people were watching there, I was like, I had to experience that also for large chunks of growing up. So like, that's what happened. And so it was always like, especially my dad would have a movie on TV. And so it was like so many movies I watched would have been like halfway from that point. I'm just like, all right, I guess I'm watching this movie now since Amazing. It's on. And so it's like, yeah, I don't know. Like, and now I kind of like the old people in my life are the only people who have cable. And so the only way I could do movies on TV are like when I'm off work for a long period of time and I'm like happen to be over somewhere and it's like, oh yeah, all right, I guess there's a movie on TV now. We're just watching a movie now.
Nice.
Damn.
I mean,
yeah. Serge, what about you?
I mean, I feel like the TV was just always on. You know, like I don't think that's true, but like, you know, I think like, yeah, I think we just watched a lot of movies. I mean, like, I think that's probably why I rewatch movies a lot too, just because since they were on, I would just watch them. Let me see what special moments I have. Halloween, I used to get like kind of the TV to myself and watch all the old Hammer and horror films on like the AMC and those special Halloween ones. So like October was kind of cool for that. As we got older, my mom discovered she liked Hallmark Christmas movies, as, you know, people often do. And so I would watch a ton of those too. But yeah, I mean, like, I've watched a ton of TV, you know, and like, I think the funny thing about it all is too, is like, thinking about that era, right? There were a lot of movies of like the cable era where like they weren't good movies, but they were like fun enough to watch on TV. I feel like that concept of a movie is gone now. Not even just as a mid-tier movie, but like movies that just kind of gained a following, gained like a steady appreciation because it was on TV more and more. So that's kind of funny, like, to think about now, because I think so many films are just like hit or miss, like in the market, or as it's called, and like, you know, like, or like or streaming services, right? Where like sometimes I'm like, I want to watch this old movie or this other movie that's not really like big, but it's gone. So it's kind of just bizarre now, where it's like, where do you go to just watch random movies that, you know, like, it just feels weird sometimes. Like, my whole like movie viewing habits have shifted because of streaming.
I feel like there's so much more intentionality in like wanting to watch a movie now, you know, like, and I do think, you know, people have talked about this, you know, like, it's best of the year, time of year, right? People are like putting together lists and stuff like that. And it's like, wow, this was a trash year for movies or whatever. But it's like the trend of things, really, I don't think it's like, this is a trash year for movies. It's like a trash year for blockbusters, right? It's a trash year for like
for Hollywood specifically.
Yeah. Well, I mean, every movie was framed as a blockbuster. Like, that's what's weird about it.
Yeah, but like, last year,
it ends with us, the blockbuster.
Yeah. I mean, like Fury Road, like, didn't do well when it came out in theaters, and it did very well afterwards, right? And I don't know when how Furiosa. I bet you Furiosa is going to follow that same kind of trend, you know? Like,
well, Furiosa also had the Australian government save it in the back end, so I think it's okay.
Yeah, but I mean, that's my point though. Like, when it came out, though, everyone was like, "Oh man, this movie's not doing well. It's not going to do anything." But it's like,
yeah, but I don't just mean for that either, right? Like, I don't mean financially. I mean, like. We had multiple dog water movies, like a lot of just shitty movies come out this year. But that's like, true. We also, other, like Lance said, specifically Hollywood, and that's true. And it's like, you look at last year and you have like, you have a whole, like, last year was a great movie, great year for film, even if financially or like even Hollywood was maybe lagging behind other places. But you have stuff like Anatomy of a Fall. You've got like,
Killers of the Flower Moon.
Oh, yeah, I mean, that was huge, and that was super good. But like, I feel like it's shifted to like, there's so much less randomness than there used to be. Like,
yeah,
you used to just get these weird movies that would come out that were just like good, fine watches, and now it's like they're trash. So much is trash, and like, it almost feels like the only things that matter that are being made are things that like you're being told to watch. You know.
Yeah,
this, I mean, I
my parents do still experience this because they have an Android box, so they have like the close to cable experience still.
You tell me they have a robot,
something like that. You know, the future is now. But you know, there are still channels that play like random movies. Like, I remember a few months ago, I walked down into the living room and I found my mom just randomly watching Bulletproof Monk.
Amazing.
I don't know if you remember Bulletproof Monk. It's from the early 2000s. It stars Chow Yun Fat and what's his face from Goon? Sean William Scott. There we go. Very trashy movie. Awful movie, honestly. But it's like the perfect TV movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That's like amazing. Like, there's some movies. He is. But like, there was like an era where there were movies that were like very perfectly made for TV, even if they weren't like television movies by design, right? Like, what's the other one? Cellular, which is a remake. Or sorry, no, Cellular was the first one. There was also Cellular, the remake, the Hong Kong remake. But the original one had Chris Evans as like a frat bro. And Kim Basinger as like a kidnappy trying to call him.
Yeah.
Like, it's not a great movie, but it's like the perfect movie for you to just put on in the background and, you know, like do other stuff too. And there was like a whole genre of movies that were like perfect for
Arnold Schwarzenegger's career, like, is all that.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of those Action Star guys, right? Like, and that was that was the other
Stop or my mom will shoot. Perfect movie for that.
I feel like that's the other half of this conversation is like, okay, holiday movies are perfect for this because that's like after you've seen a movie every year for like 3 years, it's like, okay, yeah, this just goes on and it's part of tradition or whatever, right? It's just like on and
yeah.
I like the Grinch, whatever. It's whatever. It's cool.
Yeah.
And the other half of these are just dad movies. Like, it is completely populated by dad movies where it's just like, you see it on TNT and it's like, yeah, there's only 45 minutes left, but those 45 minutes are bangers and you put it on. Like,
yeah.
You don't even need to know what happened in like the first half hour.
I've never
like,
seen
you literally just go in.
Yeah.
I've never
yeah,
even like, seen the first
like
half
with
hour.
Bulletproof Monk, I sat down, you know, like I sat down and watched it. You know, even though the movie was like 30 minutes in, I was like, you know what? I'll sit down. I'll see this through to the end.
Yeah.
And like I think that is the key thing with TV movies or like truly great TV movies is that you can just hop in at any moment and it doesn't really matter because, you know, like a lot of those things you'll end up figuring out through context clues, or maybe you're sitting next to someone who was there for the entire runtime of the movie.
Or, I mean, like, they're on so often, you're like, oh, just watch the beginning of it next time. That's how it used to be, right? Like
we're going to rerun Rudolph the Reindeer for, like, three or four times.
Like, you know.
This season, so.
People that watch It's a Wonderful Life for, like, every time, or Miracle on 34th Street, just, like, caught different parts when they were around.
Yeah. I mean, it, like, what... Like what? How do you replicate that in the streaming era if you don't have cable? Because like I know there's a lot of people that will try and find those movies on other streaming services like Tubi, for instance. I feel like Tubi is the place to be this holiday season if you want to catch like all those movies that used to be on cable.
Getting that corporate sponsorship, we finally made it.
Hey man, Tubi's free, so.
Listen, I don't see that.
I'm getting that good Fox money.
Getting that free subscription price.
No subscription price, just ads. See, that's the true TV experience too, because you get like really shitty
localized ads.
Very localized ads. You know, in like for me, when I was younger, there's a channel in Toronto called YTV. It was a kids' cable television, and throughout Christmas they would play like a whole bunch of Christmas themed movies. There was one where they had video jockeys back then, and one of the video jockeys was like a voice actress in that movie. I believe Bryan Cranston was in it too. I think it's called like the Santa Brothers or something, or the Klaus Brothers. Anyways, they play that every single Christmas, and in between it would be like their usual ad fare, so like you know, very localized commercials, as well as like toy commercials too, like Hot Wheels, a new set for you, you know, color changing Hot Wheels in between all these like Christmas movies.
Yeah.
Not to get too nostalgic here, but I think like it is a very unique experience. And I think that did play into a lot of the commercial nature of Christmas, especially when you were younger, to have like, you know, you have all these Christmas movies and you're also being inundated with ads for toys around the time when everyone should be buying toys to feed into the capitalistic trend of the year. You know, another thing that I encountered was Disney would play on cable a lot. Like Disney movies, I would see a lot of on cable television. Like I remember catching Toy Story 2. On cable, and this was like very, very basic cable too. Like it, I couldn't fathom something like that nowadays, where like I couldn't expect to see, I don't know, Inside Out 2 on basic cable. But like back then you'd have like Bolt. I don't know why Bolt was the first example I came up with.
I feel like Bolt is
the Christmas classic
fits into
Bolt.
This perfectly. Not even not like holiday either. Just like Bolt is one of these movies.
Bolt is, yeah, like it absolutely is one of those movies. Meet the Robinsons.
Yep.
You know, that's another one that's like perfect for television. Like, I think there was a time when Disney was making those kinds of movies too.
Mm-hmm.
And nowadays, if they were to make those movies, it's going straight to Disney Plus.
Yeah.
Right? Like that Inside Out TV show or special or whatever, right?
Yeah. Part of this I was thinking of is like the Netflix original film has, and like that's, this is a conversation that's happened before, right? The mid-budget movie hasn't been replaced in theaters, but it's happened in the streaming services first, right? So like Netflix originals, Hulu originals, whatever, are now the mid-budget film. That's where those things happen. They're just worse. They're like, the chances of them being good are much lower, right? Like the Chris Hemsworth ones that were produced by the Russos. That's a perfect example of this sort of thing, really. Like Extraction?
Yeah, Extraction? Yeah, Extraction 1 and 2. There's two of those movies.
Yeah.
There's two of those movies, by the way.
Against all odds. against all reason. There's two of those. I haven't even watched the second one.
There's also like a prestige element to it, because like there's this new movie on Disney Plus, Nutcrackers, by the guy who made the Halloween reboot movies. And like when you log into Disney Plus, it's like the first thing you see, and then like the subheading for it is premiered at the Toronto International Film Festival.
Wow.
Like, bro, it's a trashy holiday movie on Disney Plus. You don't need to sell it to me as like,
I mean, I think that's what's funny about it, right? Like, because like these streaming services can't figure out what they want to do with their original programming. So you'll be like, yes, here's this film, which is called Car Explosion 3. And also here's like a 4-hour meditation on the American Dream by Martin Scorsese. You know, you're like, wait.
Yeah, like right next to it, you have Beatles 64. Yeah. And then Disney Descendants sing along.
And then like the algorithm tries to like say, if you like The Irishman, you'll like Cock Exploder 6. And you're like, what? What is this? This is not like, it's like a Seth Rogen comedy, but it's like not related to it at all. So you're like, why is this even like in the feed in this way?
Yeah, because you watched The Irishman, here's Sausage Party.
Yeah, the Sausage Party original series.
Like, you need something to cool down now, you know?
Yeah. You watch Goodfellas, so try out the latest Russo Brothers slop. We think you'll like that. But you know what? In the age of cable television, I feel like that would also happen too, right? But it's not like we think, it's not an algorithm telling you. It is literally just, okay, we finished the Goodfellas block for today.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's on to the stop or my mother will shoot block of the day.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I also think AMC. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say AMC was always really funny about this, right? Because it was like American Movie Classics. So they'd be like, you know, here is Citizen Kane. Now up next are 3 hours of the Three Stooges. And you're like, what is happening?
There was something very cracked out about like scheduling.
And then they would have like a film scholar talk about both. And you're like, this is super weird. Why is this happening?
Yeah, that definitely had
We brought on Martin Scorsese to talk about this movie. But before we do that, here's 3 hours of Three Stooges. But yeah, like there's also made for television movies. Like what is your experience with movies that were specifically made for TV?
Mostly Disney Channel original films, right? Like that's, it's majorly,
yeah, the DCOMs.
It's
damn
majorly consumed by that, which are literally, those are actually like movies on TV, like
those are made specifically for the Disney Channel. Like, what is it? Smart House.
Smart
House. What's the one where the kid becomes a leprechaun?
Yeah, Luck of the Irish.
Luck of the Irish. That's the one.
You'd have the same actor.
Xenon. Yeah.
Xenon. Goated.
Xenon.
Johnny Tsunami. Two of those.
Johnny Tsunami. There was two of those. MVP, MXP, most extreme primate, most valuable primate.
What was the one, the mermaid boy one, the mer boy one? Merman.
Oh, God. Let me just search up Mermaid.
Yeah.
These movies like 13, are on Disney Plus now.
Is that a different one?
I think it's 13th year.
13th year? Because, yeah, it might be that one, which is so vague. You couldn't possibly...
Well, I searched up 13th, and I got 13th Warrior on Disney Plus, so I don't think that's the one.
A lot of these, you could guess the plot by the title. Actually, maybe not. Smart House is probably the closest.
Cadet Kelly. Who could forget Cadet Kelly?
Who could forget Cadet Kelly?
Who could forget Cadet Kelly? Lemonade Mouth?
I did not watch that one. That's Demi Lovato.
That might be a bit too after your... That might be a bit after your times.
It was borderline. But like punk rock. Those weren't.
Yeah, that's Lemonade Mouth.
Yeah.
That Camp Rock, I think, wasn't theatrical either.
Okay. High School Musicals.
High School Musicals, yeah. Like, that was an entire genre because people just, kids would have access to the Disney Channel.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think, I had the Family Channel up in Canada, which was just like, so like HBO, like Max doesn't exist up here.
Mm-hmm.
Everything from HBO Max is funneled into its own streaming service called Crave up here, which is run by one of the big telecom companies up here. So it's a very similar situation with a Family Channel, where Family Channel was a Canadian channel that would play Disney movies or like Disney content specifically. And you just don't have that now, I think. Or at least to my knowledge, it's not... it's become an Amazon Prime TV channel now.
Oh.
So, yeah. Going back to holiday-themed movies, though, I think, like, the holiday TV movie is Home Alone.
Mm.
Like, that is the one that everyone expects to be played. Like, I think more so than even, like, Nightmare Before Christmas. Again, any of the Rudolph movies, Elf. I think Home Alone has become, like, the quintessential cable TV TV movie, right? Yeah.
That's probably right. I mean, I think Charlie Brown will always... but it's like, I think I'm also thinking of that because, like, it is Thanksgiving right now. So, there's not, like, a competitive Thanksgiving movie with the Charlie Brown Thanksgiving one. But, like, yeah, that's probably right. I mean, it's so weird. Because who even has cable to have that stuff on? And if you have cable, you have all those things on. All those things are going on.
I mean, if you have an Android box, you have cable.
That's true.
You know, yeah. Like, I'm sure if I were to go downstairs and, like, flip through the channels, there probably is one playing the Home Alone movies.
Yeah.
Probably just the first five, though. Did I talk about the sixth one on here before?
I don't know.
Genuinely one of the worst movies.
Did you not talk about it?
I ever saw.
On the movies that made you lose faith in humanity?
One? Oh, you know what? I think I did. I think I might have brought it up as like an honorable mention. But just in case, Home Alone 6, otherwise known as Home Sweet Home Alone, absolutely awful movie. Horrible movie. I hate it so much. See, this is what I mean. You know, the holiday spirit just it's just not there anymore. You know, these soulless Disney original movies.
Disney
you know,
Plus.
There is
Disney
one
Plus
Disney original. Disney Plus, whatever, ugh. Whatever. You know, there is one exception to the Disney Plus original movies, and it's Chang Can't Dunk. That's a real classic. That is like a true Disney Channel original movie. You know, it contains the true spirit of it, and it came out on Disney Plus in 2023. Yeah, Chang Can Dunk. Not to be confused with the White Men Can't Jump remake featuring Jack Harlow. That was next level horrible.
Here's a whole different aside. It's crazy. Like, there's an American-born Chinese adaptation on Disney Plus, and like,
yeah,
not a second of it has passed into my brain. Nuts.
I remember hearing about it, and I think at some point it was revealed that it would be deviating like very heavily from the comic, and I think at that point, any interest that I might have had in it just dissipated completely, and then I completely forgot about it.
Yeah.
After that point. And it had, like, Michelle Yeoh, too, mm-hmm. right? Like, it. I think it came out, like, just a few months after Everything Everywhere All at Once?
No,
or,
it was
like,
a year.
Even a few
like
months
a
after.
Year later, I think.
Okay. Oh, no, sorry. It came out, like, a few months after she had won the Oscar.
Or, like, casting stuff. We found out the casting of it, because it's her and the daughter from Everything Everywhere All at Once, I think, who's...
I think so.
Remember.
And I think Kwan was in it too.
I think he might have also been in it. Yeah. And they were really writing. And
insane.
I think they announced the casting when Everything Everywhere All at Once got crazy in theaters. Like when it was.
Yeah. And the director,
popular.
I think, was the director of Shang-Chi too.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's like.
A whole confluence of. But yeah. Didn't even. Not even. Just.
Didn't register. But you know, if it was on the Disney Channel. If it
I
was on Disney
it.
XD,
I would have been watching.
You would have been watching.
Oh, I don't know.
At the ripe age of 20, what did you have been back then? 27.
I don't even know. But Disney XD pisses me off still to this day. Because like, for some reason, we didn't even have like I don't know what cable packages. This is beyond my comprehension. But whatever it was, when things shifted to Disney XD, we didn't have XD for like years. And so a bunch of shows that I was watching moved to Disney XD, and it was just like, nope, I just can't watch that. So like, actually, I think Rebels was on Disney XD, and that was why I never watched Rebels.
See, that explains it.
I never watched Rebels, but there's other stuff too. Because I think... Wasn't DuckTales, when it first came back, originally Disney XD?
I think so.
So
I mean,
I think, like for a whole swath, a whole number of years, there was stuff on Disney XD that, like, wouldn't go to Hulu, wouldn't go to other things. And it was pre-Disney Plus, too, because that didn't matter as soon as Disney Plus existed. And it was just like, I hate Disney XD. It's, why? This is nonsense.
I mean, I think that does bring up an interesting point about, like, the financial barrier to entry. Because, like, a lot of these movies we're talking about are on basic cable. But, like, after a certain point, when you get into, like, paid cable TV packages, you know, there is an entire generation of kids that, like, didn't experience everything. Like, the DCOM thing. Family Channel wasn't a basic cable TV thing here. So if you didn't have it, you just weren't watching those shows. Or you weren't watching those movies either. And, you know, similarly, anything that required a paid subscription wasn't going to be seen by everyone. So it is like, when you're talking about like the nostalgia of it, I think there is a sort of... I don't know if I'd call it myopia or like an expectation or an assumption that it's like a universal thing, right? I feel like Home Alone might be one of those, or Home Alone might be as close to universal as possible, or at least until Salt, you know, drops the reveal that he somehow didn't
watch a single Home Alone movie. He's never even heard of it.
Like we're talking about like universal. I feel like Salt should have been on this episode. You know, yeah. Like just to put every one of these claims to the test. It's like you guys remember watching Rudolph the Reindeer as a kid?
He's like, what's that? I could see that happening.
Serge,
he's the Grinch.
Serge, what?
Who is this man? Who? He stole it. Oh, holiday? Why are we letting him free?
Serge, you taught kids, right? So you would probably know more about, like...
The youth.
Watching habits, or maybe, like, the... Yeah, you know more about the youth and, like, what the kids are up to with, like, this time of the year, I guess. Like, did you have anything? Like, was there anything around that time... For these kids, You know, it'd be really funny is if we found out that Serge has been missing, the call for like the past 10 minutes and we just didn't notice.
We were just riffing for so long that we were just like, there was no laughter from Serge for significant.
And I was like kind of getting concerned because like I wasn't seeing anything from Serge for a bit there.
I like pulled up planning and I'm like, hey Serge, you live dog?
All right.
Or what if, oh, okay.
Oh, I was like, I thought I was on too. So I was talking this whole time and no one was hearing me. But I was like,
oh,
okay. I was like laughing too. So I was like, I didn't contribute, but I was like, I was trying to respond and realized I wasn't answering.
It's going to be so great when I get to the recordings and like, I have your recording from you know, like yeah. your side, and there'll be like moments where you're trying to talk and we're just talking because we didn't hear any of that, right?
You need to leave all that in. Just the most giant confusing.
God.
You know, it's funny though with like kids when they with the holiday stuff too, especially now, like because they're all used to streaming, so they all stream on their phone too, which like felt like for me as an old like something I can't really do, you know, like, but like, they're also just sometimes watching older things. Like they're watching like Shameless and stuff. And I'm like, that's super weird that you're like watching that show of all shows.
I mean, that is one of the like quintessential TikTok clip shows though.
Yeah.
Like even my brother who has never seen an episode of Shameless in his life will like talk to me about Shameless. I'm like, how do you know about this? And then you know, like you'll show like YouTube shorts are like huge on Shameless clips.
So I wonder so like really, if that's a new TV movie thing. It's just people watching like clips of the
clips.
Clips of the Sopranos and like Shameless and like,
like we gotta split up Home Alone into like 32 parts to be watched on TikTok. Didn't they do that with a movie recently?
They did it with Mean Girls
or
For Mean Girls Day,
Mean
I think.
Girls.
And I think they did it with another movie first, and that's why Mean Girls did it. They've done it with a bunch of stuff. I mean, like, it's always really funny when somebody posts an entire movie on Twitter. Like,
Like, when Elon Musk first took over, people just, like, uploaded three-hour movies onto, like...
It's so funny.
I remember, like, within a week of it... Within a week of, like, two-hour movies... Or, sorry, like, two-hour, three-hour videos being allowed, someone posted the entirety of Dragon Ball Super Broly to Twitter.
It's so good.
That's real good.
So really, that's how you get the kids nowadays. Is like, you gotta just start uploading classic TV core movies.
A lot of my kids had seen Dragon Ball Super Broly, and I was, like, pretty surprised. First, I was surprised that people were still watching Dragon Ball. I sometimes forgot, like, that was a thing, being in adult spaces. And then I was like, oh, dang. Like, that's what actually got me back into Dragon Ball, because they're all like, oh, you know all this? I'm like, yeah, I grew up with this, kids.
Buddy.
like, you have no idea.
I was there when the ancient texts were written.
You have no idea what you're saying. So it was, like, super funny with that. I mean, I do find, like, some of it also funny, like, the TV movie thing, because, like, you know, like I brought up like Arnold Schwarzenegger's career, but like a lot of like top actors and directors would do like weird movies that were like just kind of like almost designed to do well on television. So like, I mean, like famously, like Spielberg did Duel, right? And that's how he got his start before he did Jaws. You know, but like again, like Total Recall, which is a Schwarzenegger movie, which was on TV all the time. I love that film, but it's like, it's by Bert Verhoeven. And so it's like, what is this? Why? You know, so like it's super funny sometimes to think about like that. Like I remember watching like Raiders of the Lost Ark on TV a lot. You know, so like not just like, it's not just necessarily a qualitative thing almost, it's more like a watchability thing in some way, in some instances.
I mean, it is also an interesting thing in terms of like the grand cinephiles canon. Like everyone has like the must watch movies, right? Like, oh, how you need to watch Indiana Jones before you die, you need to watch, you know, Goodfellas, and you know, these are all movies that do end up showing on TV at one point. So I think like it is a good way of building out a palette, I guess, for film too. Like, for as much as there are like very trashy mid-tier movies on TV, there are also a lot of good movies that, you know, get play on TV, like cable TV specifically.
I was thinking about this a little bit ago, like as we were talking to, and it's weird because it's almost like the movies that become those classic play on TV movies end up entering the canon. And like, it's not, I don't know, there's no discussion of deserving or not, but like, It's a Wonderful Life. That's its entire reason it's popular is because they were like, we need some like unpopular movie to just throw on TV and we're just going to play it. And they played it enough years in a row that like it became a tradition, and then it became
a part of, yeah.
And so like, it's this weird thing too, where I do think a lot of these movies get elevated to like a certain status because you just like, oh yeah, this is really cool and I'm going to watch it. And it's like, it's available, it's accessible.
Yeah. I think accessibility, I think, is a huge thing. Because, like, even with the financial barriers that I mentioned before, like, there's still a lot that people back then could, you know, experience. Like, even if they didn't, even if they weren't going out to the theaters, even if they weren't, you know, like, renting or anything. I think Walter Cha has a piece in, oh, God, what is it? David Fincher did a mini series for Netflix about like just movies in general. I think it's called like Voir. and there was one about like the evolution of the movie going experience and like how, you know, with stuff like movies being aired on TV that like fundamentally shifted the way that people got into movies, to especially like, you know, there was a time when VHSs were prohibitively expensive, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, like, I think, too, for whatever reason, I feel like a lot of... Well, I don't know. This also intersects with DVD stuff, right? I don't know. You mentioned a movie earlier, Serge, talking about, like, different ways that things became popular. And I feel like both those routes, like... cable or DVD, both those routes allowed a weird, not even a weird movie, but just a movie that was like not as splashy, or even maybe it did okay in the theaters, but it was just like, well, we want to keep making money off of this thing. And it gave them different avenues to be more profitable and find a foothold too with people.
Yeah, I think like, because like, so when you go see a movie in a theater, it's like a specific kind of experience, right? Like, you're going, you know, a lot of times people go on dates there, or you would go as like an event because you're like, oh, I finally get to go out, right? So you kind of want like a certain kind of experience to go see a movie. Even this day, you know, people still kind of see movies in that way. And I think about that a lot because, you know, like, so like when you do get some of these films that were a little weird or not what you expected, you know, like it just didn't, you know, like it just wouldn't hit you necessarily. And then if you watch TV, you're like, oh, it's doing that. That's kind of neat. Or, hey, man, that's a little weird. Or that's a strange twist, right? So I think about that like a lot of times with like just how we consume in general. Like, so, you know, like a lot of things are so dependent on like grabbing you right away, right? And I think that's like super funny sometimes, like especially again, like, you know, I'm going to keep referencing TikTok, but like the TikTok era of everything, right? Where like you have a lot of people on book talk and stuff like saying like, oh, I didn't like this book. You know, it didn't grab me right away. And they're like, talk about Leo Tolstoy's War and Peace. And I'm like, well, that's like a, like, you know, like that's a giant book. That's not supposed to grab you right away. It's like, it's a book you read and then you like put away and think about, right? Like it's, and, you know, there's a lot of comics, I think, that work that kind of way now, right? Where like they have like limited runs and then they're kind of like, well, let's see how people grab it. Where if, when you look at older comics, you know, they have like, you know, it's like you have 3 years to get an audience, you know, and like, which is like unthinkable now, right? So I don't know.
The,
I
mean, runway is interesting for sure.
Yeah, like,
I think there's
like the consumer expectation is, too,
right? I wonder if a lot of that is because of the streaming era demanding so much attention from viewers. Like we talk about the illusion of choice, right? Like when you're logging into Netflix and you're bombarded with like 100 movies and TV shows all vying for your attention. You have to like choose which one. Like, I remember a few years ago, it got to the point where I like took all the movies on my watch list across like various streaming services. I just put them into like a script, and I would just have that script like choose a random movie from that list to watch that movie. Just because like going into the streaming service, it's very difficult to be like, oh, I'm not in the mood to watch this movie, but I really do want to watch this movie. Maybe not right now though. And I think the script part really did force me into watching it. And I guess that is the closest that you could get to the cable experience in the streaming era, where like you're resigned to watching what someone else says you have to watch at this given moment, or something else has to watch at this given moment. Like, there's no, it's weird to want to go back to a point where you don't have as much choice as you have right now. Mm-hmm. But I think the arresting nature of like all the choice, and like the way that it can like cause you to like freeze. I don't know. I think the streaming service era does promote executive dysfunction in some ways.
I mean, I think about it a lot with like how we engage genre. Like, 9 times out of 10 when I sit down to watch a movie, I really want to watch a Western or like a noir film. Like, those are my two favorite genres I watch all the time. And like, but when you go on Netflix and some of these ones, they either have like the one I've seen a million times or and nothing else. And it's like, you know, so it's like very weird at some points, because you see the algorithm trying to configure to appeal to the widest amount of people. And it's like, sometimes I just want to watch the Maltese Falcon, like a movie I've seen a million times, but it also doesn't have the same audience. So it's like not on these streaming services, and then there's rights and these battles too. So it becomes like this very weird thing, especially because like you said,
international
like,
cinema.
Yeah,
for sure.
I mean, like, I mean, like, and again, or like, you know, again, watching like Kurosawa. And I think right now, being in Europe right now, it's even weirder, because I don't have access to Criterion, which was probably my favorite streaming service.
What, you don't have access?
They don't have Criterion out here.
Wow.
So it's like,
because I know Criterion recently introduced like that almost cable kind of thing, where it was just like a 24/7 stream of movies in their catalog.
That's brilliant. I mean, like, especially because, you know, like, again, sometimes you just kind of want someone to tell you, hey, this is what we're putting on, and you're like, well, I want to see it, or no, or yeah, why not, I'll watch it. Like,
yeah, I've got time to kill, I'll tune in.
Yeah, or like, you know what, like, I wasn't gonna watch this originally, but you know what, like, I'm into it. So I don't know. I find that like really fascinating, that idea, especially like, and I think I've said this, you know, at different times, where like a lot of genre filmmaking, or like even in comics and stuff, I think kind of weirdly suffers the most from a lot of this, where like, because people are like, well, this isn't like gonna do the best, but it's also like the ones that consistently sell almost, right? So it's like Constantine, right? Like, talking about the comic Constantine, where Constantine wasn't a top seller ever. It never like really did that, but it did steady enough in the graphic novel market where it just kept going forever, you know. And I think that's kind of interesting about like looking at some of this and some of these like consolidations and efforts to like maximize profit. It's like, well, it's not going to make you like the most money, but it's generally like certain people have this like desire, and they're going to watch that and go for that entirely. And I think that's why like Hallmark is kind of like the king of like made for TV movie, and they just kind of lean into it now. And it's kind of funny, because they just deliver like the perfect like formula for like, you know what, like, you just want a stupid rom-com, I got you. Like, you know,
if you want to watch Hot Frosty, go ahead.
Yeah, like, no one's under any illusions about like what they're watching or what it is or anything else like that. They're just like, this is nice and fun, I can watch this because I'm tired, or just something to put on the TV. And I think there's something like really kind of valuable about that, instead of like trying to wow everyone or trying to like make something that's going to be franchised out, or like, you know, whatever else, how, whatever genre you want to, however you want to look at that. But it's kind of fascinating to see that in terms of made for TV movies, because you know, it kind of, since it does remove that choice, it kind of does let you have like this weirder sense of artistry, I think, in some ways.
Yeah,
like, not that Hallmark does it, but like, again, like when you watch Duel and you watch Spielberg do it, it's a very simple plot, but like everything he does in that movie is brilliant, you know?
Mm-hmm. And it happened because the TV execs were like, well, we have a slot to fill. Yeah. Why don't you
exactly
do this?
Exactly.
Yeah. I wonder what the future is for these kinds of things. Like, you know, not just in a holiday movie, but like, what is it? The Great Pumpkin special, the Charlie Brown special that got moved to Apple TV. And that was like a whole thing. Uh-huh. I think Sesame Street also had the same thing where new episodes would debut on HBO or sorry, Max first.
Yeah.
And then go to PBS.
Yeah.
And I wonder if there's going to be like a reckoning or maybe or like a concerted effort to try and return properly back to like the cable experience, cuz everyone's doing it now, right? Yeah. Like even Tubi has like live streams, like Tokushoutsu on YouTube has like several ongoing streams where they're just playing like Godzilla movies or like episodes of Sentai or whatever, right? Like the 24-hour stream, the 24/7 stream seems to be like the replacement for the cable TV experience in this era.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just like the logical conclusion of like the end of the streaming wars, right? Because it was almost like a mad dash to grab up any and every property you can. Everyone was trying to make their own streaming service. So like you had like 20 streaming services and none of them had like they had maybe one or two things each you wanted, not like, you know, like
It's on Pubu, it's on Ego.
It's like, you know, like so
it's on Pluber.
Yeah. It's funny though, because like now it's like people don't really want to consume stuff that way. So I think we're trying to see like consolidations, but also just people trying to give up because it's just like it's exhausting to populate all that, right? So I don't know. We'll see what happens with it all, but like, you know, it is frustrating at other times too, though, because if it's not profitable, it disappears, right? So like HBO had Raised by Wolves, which was like a fun TV show. Like that would have been a fun like prestige show to just kind of put on after Game of Thrones or whatever. And it's like a streaming era. So it's like, but now it's gone because they took it off because it wasn't like, you know, I don't know, whatever profitable margins they had.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like the HBO is such a weird thing in all of this, right? Because like Zaslav is an evil person, a monster.
Yeah.
But like HBO also feels like they care so, in a good way too. I'm not even saying this in a bad way, but like they care so much about their prestige catalog and their prestige appearance. And like they were trying to figure out the way to do like HBO, the channel that puts on great TV shows, HBO, the streaming service that has a lot of slop, you know? And like you could watch them in real time start trying to differentiate like, okay, slop is a Max original. And then like our good stuff is an HBO show. And like I think they were thinking in it about it in the right way, but they also just have an evil person at the helm doing like ridiculous tax write-off stuff that doesn't really make sense to anybody. And so like they're just this really weird example that I do feel like they have figured out, not as much as Criterion. Criterion is actually probably the future of all of these things, I think, probably. Or bundles, right? We're already seeing those happen more and more. They're recreating cable in the aggregate. But like, yeah, I don't know. I like that thinking that HBO does, though. I know a lot of people were like, this is, and I'm like, I understand having like a limited catalog available for streaming, like I feel like that is better than just having everything all the time forever. Like, I get that.
Yeah, I mean, it is still kind of annoying, though, because, like, a lot of these, like, when they're cycling them out, they just don't give enough, warning. Yeah. Like, at most, you'll get, like, oh, this is leaving in 7 days, and I'm like, well, you just made 7 days available for, or sorry, you gave me 7 days to watch, like, the 14 or 15 movies that you just decided to cycle out.
Yeah. And yeah, right? I think... And then, like, I even think those limited, like, okay, let's say a month, hey, or even like put a date, hey, this is leaving in 6 months. And so everybody knows, like, this is leaving in 6 months.
Yeah, Criterion does that very well.
Yeah, that could create like
a cool, they like cycle them back in, too. Right? They'll be like, it's coming back.
Yeah.
And like, what isn't the Batman on Netflix right now? Or it was months ago?
Yeah. I think it was at one point.
Which is stupid. I don't understand.
There are like quite a few bits of like there. I remember there was a time. Or sorry, you know, right now in Canada at least, Shazam: Fury of the Gods is on Netflix.
Oh wow, amazing. We got a rush, man. I need to go up to Canada so I can watch Shazam too.
You know, I've been like holding off on watching it because I'm like waiting for the day that it's gonna say like, oh, this leaves Netflix on like
watch soon.
You know, and watch soon, because that's probably gonna be the only way that it's either that or we watch it for this podcast. I think those are the only two ways I'm gonna actually end up watching Shazam: Fury of the Gods.
Yeah, you feel too stressed not to.
Well, you know, that's what it is. It's a stress. You know, that I think it goes back to the control thing though, right? Like where before, you know, when it wasn't at risk of leaving the platform, you're like, well, I can just watch it whenever I want. I don't feel like watching it. But you know, when you're given that timeline, well, you have 7 days, like
you feel
like
pressure to watch in November. Shazam,
oh, yes, exactly. Exactly. You know, well, I didn't have that with Shazam last month, but for November, at the end of the month, a whole bunch of Hong Kong movies were leaving Netflix, like from Johnny To, including like Accident and Don't Go Breaking My Heart. So like I was rushing to watch those movies before they left. And, you know, like if that risk or like that concern wasn't there, like if that timeline wasn't there, I probably would have put those movies off for like a significant amount longer. I think it's a double-edged sword. Like I like it and I hate it, where I think nowadays for streaming services, a lot of my watching habits are based off of those timelines too, where like I'll go, you know, weeks without watching anything. But then the second that I notice that, you know, like countdown is there, I'm like, okay, well, I gotta start watching this now.
Yeah, I mean, I
feel like that's the future of programming, or at least that's, no, I don't think that's the future. I think that's the present of programming. I think that's like the same way they program channels, because it's like
a small domino. Yeah, I think for
they've given so much freedom to everybody that everybody has choice paralysis. Everybody has executive dysfunction choosing what.
Yeah, 90 and they just don't end up watching
anything.
Yeah.
Or they watch the same things over and over. And so it's like, well, this is leaving. And it's like, okay, now I have a week to watch this 14 things, which basically goes out to what? Two movies a day, which is basically what cable would be doing.
Like, yeah.
I think, you know, I don't know if this is a universal experience, but I feel like that is the way to get more people to watch the stuff on the platform, to be like, well, this is only going to be here for 2 weeks, right? Yeah. Or like if Disney Plus was like, okay, well, we've debuted Interior Chinatown, but it's only gonna be here
if they said
for like 2 weeks, right?
Or like each episode is available for 2 weeks, even, like that would be crazy. But that's what cable did, right? It was like you had one chance to watch it when it came on, and then a really, really popular show would have a rerun time later on.
Yeah, like I guess that is the future, where it's like, if you really want people to watch this, you give them like maybe a 2 week limit, right? And then after that, you have to wait like six more months before,
and it might be on another streaming service.
Rejoins,
like,
you have 2 weeks to watch Shazam: Fury of the Gods, or else it's hitting Tubi.
Yeah,
it's like a threat.
It's like whack-a-mole. You have to
nice.
Hit it when it's there.
I mean, I do think there is kind of probably a thing to do where you can do like, you know, like, so Criterion does the thing where like they have like, we're bringing 30 different movies in different blocks, like organized each month, and then we'll rotate out some other ones, right? And I think that's, I like the thematic pairing of this kind of things, whether it's all just one actor, whether it's all just like a genre, whether it's like just language. I feel like that's a lot of fun too, because And then, you know, they can algorithmically figure out what they want to bring back more often than not. But, you know, like, I think right now the hard part is with, like, rotating in and out things is, like, it's also arbitrary, right? So it'll be like, we're rotating out 6 rom-coms and 1 true crime story. And then you're like, oh, damn, I kind of wanted to watch a rom-com. Or, like, but I feel like I have to watch the true crime story because it's not going to be here again, you know?
Yeah. I think it is like a time thing too. Yeah. Right? Like so much of it is contingent on viewer habits. And I don't know what the average viewer habit is for any of these streaming services. I feel like it varies per streaming mm-hmm. service too. Right. Where like the average Tubi viewer isn't watching or streaming stuff the way that the average Netflix user or the average Disney Plus user, or even the average Prime Video user is doing it. But yeah, I think there is a push to want to go back to like that cable experience. And I think the people in charge of these streaming services are starting to notice that too.
Yeah.
Not just from like a cultural and a societal perspective, but like a financial one too.
Mm-hmm. I mean, even like, I think from a production perspective, like some of these shows, man, like when they like again, when they get turned out to like get binged all in one go, they're awful. You know, like some of them are just truly just terrible. Like again, like Netflix has had a string of truly awful shows. Whereas before, they'd almost reconfigured them from season to season or from like, you know, moment to moment. Like again, like comparing like the first season of The Office to like the second and third season, where it just kind of jumped up as they watched how people reacted to certain things and they figured out what the cast can and can't do. And you compare it to like Cowboy Bebop, the show, the live action show. And it was just like, man, this is so terrible. And we're never going to see another one of it. It might have been good at some point, but, you know, it's just like.
Yeah, like think of how many sitcoms only really got good in their third season.
Yeah.
I feel like there's only like 3 examples that can come to mind.
They're all Michael Shore, Greg Daniels.
They're all Michael Shore. Yeah.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine was better 1 than 3, probably.
That's but yeah.
I think too, when we talk about the like execs, right? These are guys who were running things during the cable era too. You know,
yeah,
like so many of them,
like
have
the Bob Iger,
yeah, they've just like switched seats. Yeah. So, like, well, I mean, Iger has been there for forever, but I think Zaslav has like jumped around more. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And but like a lot of these people, they've been running, like, I can't think of like huge news of anybody being replaced by somebody who's actually young, right? So, like, this is even young people with stupid ideas, these are old people chasing $5 at a time. Like, I don't really get why they don't have better ideas. And I feel like maybe it was like they were swimming into uncharted waters. And so it was like, yeah, tough to figure out the streaming era when Netflix reinvented everything right underneath everyone. But like,
I mean,
it's funny how all of them are also seeking comfort. Like, they're clearly like, hey man, do you want to make an alliance? And we'll recreate. They're recreating cable in the aggregate, right? Like HBO, yeah. come here, HBO. Maybe we could get Paramount in here too. It could be just like the old days. And it's like, you killed the old days, guys. Old man, what are you doing?
I mean, the funny part about it though is like, even like as streaming was taking off, you still had shows like Breaking Bad and like Mad Men and like Boardwalk Empire. Yeah. Like you had all these shows that are like that do well both on cable and streaming. And it's like, you know, like again, it's kind of like the lesson was supposed to be like, you know, just if you want to make these kind of like fun, whatever kind of things. And even like with movies, like there is still a formula that exists that worked that didn't ruin itself during the transition. But it's like this idea of like, we got to cut costs too. And it's like, everyone notices.
It's a multi-pronged approach.
Yeah, everyone, it's like, yeah, it's a multi-pronged approach to all these bad ideas. You know, like, yeah. And I think that's what's funny about it. It's like, because, you know, even though we've kind of changed how we consume and how we demand media, we don't change how we process it, right? So like, we still expect movies to have a start and finish. We still expect TV shows to like, have well-developed characters, have plot pacing and everything else.
Yeah. Even like going into genres, you know, so with like, that. That's like there's 42 minute and there's 22 minute. Like we still basically have that.
Yeah, like even like the most basic, like again, the most basic like made for TV movie has to like deliver a story. It's not like you know, I think this is like what makes Marvel so funny sometimes is like, I mean, they did that Guardians Christmas special and it was kind of like,
oh yeah,
you know, like it wasn't anything, but like it felt like a oh, we're not ready yet for a product. Here you go. Here's something in the meanwhile, you know, like it was like half a story, you know. And
yeah, but you know what? I think, oh, that's a weird case, because like that is clearly trying to capture the vibe of the holiday
of a Christmas special, TV yeah, special. Of a trash, yeah, like half movie. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
You just described the thing that does exist and it copied
yeah.
it.
No, 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 that's what I'm saying. And yet they don't like achieve it, right? Yeah. Like, yeah. It's like, do we lose the art of making recipes. Those kinds of things?
The recipes are gone.
I mean, like when you say Christmas special,
show.
You already go in with low expectations. So if you yeah. somehow manage to fail even those, you're like, what are we doing here? Like,
yeah. If all of the other reindeer is outclassing you and you're like multi-million dollar product, you know, I think that's the issue is that holiday specials are now becoming multi-million dollar productions. When in reality, they really should just be made on the
shoestring budget. Yeah, I saw the Lindsay Lohan Christmas special from Netflix. And it was better.
I'm sorry, is that a thing?
Yes, it's on Netflix. Yeah. It's awful.
You just made it's up so a thing. It's
so bad. No, it's real. It's called Falling for Christmas. It's for really Christmas. Like okay. not good, but it's still better than the Guardians of the Galaxy one. like that's my point. It's like, it like she and the guy have like no chemistry. It's like the cliches, but it's like super terrible. And it's amazing because it's still better. Like it's still like an actual storyline. It's not a good story, but it's still there.
Like, right. It's a known quantity.
Yeah.
Is that what it is? Yeah. Okay.
Like, I mean, you're just saying it's a Christmas special with Lindsay Lohan movie. And you're like, okay.
Whatever's like, on the box.
Like no yeah. one's expecting this to be, you know, this is directed by Francis Ford Coppola. You know?
I mean, you well, know, it might be.
Anybody we'll can revive see. It. You know, it's
like... Francis Ford
Christmas you know, it
was funny. I was watching Francis Ford Coppola's Tucker, The Man in His Dream, like a month ago. And that is like a like made for TV. So he, you know what? I think he does have the juice for a proper holiday special.
I mean,
you know, I was we just got to coax it out.
Talking about this, so like Alfred Hitchcock did quite a few Alfred Hitchcock Presents. Like he actually directed some of those. You know, like how funny would that be if Jordan Peele did like Jordan Peele Presents and did like just a series of TV movies? Yeah. How cool would that be? You know what I mean? Like
didn't
that
he would have be the so Twilight good. Zone.
Did
yeah?
Did it actually happen? Because I don't remember.
I don't know. Maybe this is just something that I'm making up.
I don't.
I think that was an anthology, right?
It was an anthology thing, right? But I don't know if it was like a.
I don't think he directed them. I think he just like produced them.
Well, I think he introduced them at least. Though. Yeah, like, I thought he was the like Rod Serling
or
type.
Like the Guillermo del Toro Cabinet of Curiosities is another good one, right? Because that's like a bunch of like amazing directors just making weirdo horror movies for like Netflix.
Yeah.
And like you know, like that was fun. Like sometimes I do feel like we kind of need to just go back to like
those kind of
we must repress escape to return. This is what they took from us.
you know, like, this is what they took from us, and it's all of the other reindeer.
It's Phil Hartman doing the behind the scenes of How the Grinch Stole Christmas.
It's Home Alone 5 starring Malcolm McDowell. I was gonna say Malcolm Gladwell. No, Malcolm Gladwell is gonna be the next Jennifer Lopez.
Malcolm Gladwell movie. Doing a Home Alone. Being, oh no, they left me here.
Malcolm Gladwell telling the Sticky Bandits, you know, if you put 10,000 hours into your crap, you probably could have robbed this house no problem.
Just learn how to slide on marbles, you fools.
Maybe let go of the doorknob if it's hurting you.
Those poor men.
You know.
Harassed
it's called learning from
boy.
Your mistakes.
Two times this happened.
Yeah. Oh man.
I think that's a good note to wrap things up on.
Yeah.
We managed to get quite a bit out of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Every single one of these off-season episodes that we're doing, I'm like, damn, we really do know how to yap.
Yeah, we're just riffing.
Yeah.
That's what this is teaching me. It's like, you know, give us any topic and we probably can find a way to yap about it.
We'll fill the time. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, as always, the show is made possible thanks to contributions from you, listeners like you, contributions from people that are weathering through this off season, you know, while we're planning for what comes after the off season. We still don't know what that looks like. We might know by the time this episode comes out, who knows? But if you would like to support the show, you can do so at patreon.com/midnightgrapplerAnimals. $2 a month gets you uncensored episodes a week earlier than the public, maybe even several weeks earlier than the public if one of us, namely me, neglects to post to the public feed for like a month, as well as the ability to vote on future episode topics. And $5 a month gets you not only that, but our entire backlog of bonus episodes and Patreon exclusive series. We recently put out a bonus accompaniment to our Malian series covering Alien Romulus. Did me and Salt like it? Listen to find out. But, you know, you can get not only that, but access to exclusive channels in our Discord server. You can also support us through morale. Give us a good review on your podcast app of choice. You can tell us and tell the people of the world just how well we're yapping in this off season. And as always, if you have comments, questions, or suggestions for the show, you can email us at midnightgrapplerAnimals@gmail.com. And if you want to find the links to our Discord server, as well as our Blueski pages, you can find that in the description of this episode. All right. Tastemaker's grab bag. What have we got this week?
I'll go first.
Go for it.
Okay. This isn't a thing I read recently, but it is a thing I think about frequently. I'm probably gearing up for a reread. I don't remember when the next volume is coming out though. That's the only thing that I'm like, do I want to reread now or wait? But it's The Night Eaters by, Marjorie Liu Sana Takeda. I mean, those two make incredible comics too. Go ahead, throw Monstrous in too. Monstrous is also absolutely Tastemaker's grab bag. They're just like, it's insane that they're doing two entire series at the same time. I mean, obviously both definitely had significant delays because of it, but still super cool. Night Eaters is just like the very like, I'm so tired of superhero origins. And it is a superhero origin in a very fun and messed up way. So I'm throwing that in mostly because I have to save as many Tastemaker grab bag choices as I possibly can right now. So Night Eaters and Monsters.
Yeah, all these is. I think for the off season, all of mine are just gonna be like one entry.
Yeah. I don't have the power from there.
All right, for me, I'll say Liza P. I'm playing Liza P right now. It's, you know, like I bought it and I really wanted to play it. And then like all the DLC came out for like Cyberpunk and I was getting hyped for the DLC for Elden Ring. And like, I got so sidetracked with all that stuff that I'm finally going back to Liza P. It's a blast. It's a good game. Go play it.
Nice. I'm going to hop on the games train and I'm going to recommend Abzu. It's like 8 years old at this point. Very quick experience. I think it only took me like 3 or 4 hours to get through everything. It's a beautiful experience. Like, it is very chill, very atmospheric, very mellow. I'm pretty sure it goes on sale very, very often. So if you're looking for like a very chill video game experience, I'd recommend Abzu. All right, that was Tastemaker's grab bag. And, you know, I thought I would have the segue between that and the, but I still haven't. So, you know what? Thanks for listening.
Keep on grappling.
Keep going.
Yep, as always.
Grappling. Always.
grapple away to Grapfinity and beyond.
Yeah. Keep on grappling.
Perfect as always. Perfect as always.
Nailed it.
I was waiting for you to say as always.
Oh.